It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Co-host Veronica Rickert will be back with me on the air tomorrow. Coming up, a political scientist joins us to discuss the year of the female Democratic candidate in Wisconsin. She'll talk about how gender is playing into the state's politics. First, President Obama came to Milwaukee today. The president spoke at Labor Fest. While he may return to Wisconsin to campaign for candidate Mary Burke, today the pair did not appear together on stage. Supporters of Governor Walker say Burke is trying to distance herself from the president and his lackluster approval ratings in Wisconsin. The Burke camp says the president has been invited back, so it will happen. The question remains, how much political pull does the president have with voters, and how close will Democratic candidates want to get to him before Election Day? Mordecai Lee joins us now. He's professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Mordecai, thanks for joining us again.
Hi, Rob.
So it wasn't a campaign event exactly. So why did President Obama, do you think, decide to spend part of Labor Day here in Wisconsin?
Well, everything that a politician does is political. Now, of course, the president came on the taxpayer's dime. It was an official visit. He made a formal speech. He didn't engage in politicking. And this is routine. George W. Bush did it. President Obama does it. But there always is a political angle. And I liked your introduction. Presumably, there was a purpose for the visit. And I think it's relatively easy to peel back the onion and see the purpose. For the last couple elections, Republicans frequently talked about base mobilization, that the way to win an election was through base mobilization. And that was sort of the mantra of George W. Bush's reelection campaign in, 2004. Now the Democrats are facing a kind of a base mobilization problem because they're going into a midterm election. What we have to remember is that there's a whole sort of layer of voters who, I guess we'd call them presidential voters. They vote once every 4 years. They tend to be lower than average in income and education and age, and they tend to skew Democratic. And that's sort of the Democratic advantage in presidential elections. The converse is true for the midterm elections, where there's a lower turnout and it skews Republican. So getting back to why was Obama in Milwaukee today, I think what he was trying to do is he was trying to mobilize the base to get them to vote in a midterm election in the same way that they would vote in a presidential election. That would then even the odds of Democrats winning a gubernatorial office versus Republicans.
Well, the president's approval rating has slid down somewhat in the state, according to the latest Marquette polls. Do Democratic candidates in Wisconsin, maybe elsewhere too, want the president appearing with them or on their behalf?
Well, it seems to me that sort of we as citizens tend to think poorly of politicians. We tend to think of politicians as a bunch of hacks and cronies. But actually, my experience is that a candidate for office is the ultimate in rational decision-making. They do something because it advantages them, and they avoid doing something if it disadvantages them. And so here we've got a situation where having the president here might mobilize the base to turn out. But on the other hand, Mary Burke doesn't want to get too closely identified with the president, exactly as you described it, Rob, because if she's going to win over that small number of undecideds, then every little advantage or disadvantage is worth focusing on. And if she thought it was a disadvantage, that's why she wasn't there.
Well, I would imagine Democrats in Wisconsin have four numbers in their head: 2010, 2010, the year of, from the Democratic perspective, a disastrous election, losing the governor's office, both houses of the legislature, a couple congressional seats, Senate seat. Is it going to be that kind of election here again for Democrats in Wisconsin, or do they even have that much left to lose at this point?
Rob, I really think you've put your finger on it. 2010 was a midterm election. Republicans were energized. The base was mobilized. And on the other side of the fence, Democrats were demoralized and sort of didn't turn out to vote. And so it's exactly the way you described it, Rob. There was a huge Republican wave of victories, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally. So here we're coming into the same situation, and Democrats don't want the same thing to happen. So with the president's visit, they're trying to mobilize their base. With a moderate candidate for governor, they've got a better chance of winning. And in general, it seems that Democrats and Republicans are more evenly located going into this election than they were in 2010. But it still advantages Republicans. If there's a normal turnout, the turnout will skew Republican, even if it's not quite as much of a blowout as what happened 4 years ago.
And the president, as far as the content of his speech, of course, it's Labor Day. He talked up the value of labor, and organized labor was well represented on his plane ride over, as I understand it. But a lot of the focus was on trying to make the case that his efforts have paid off in terms of economic recovery in the U.S. As far as future policy, making the call to increase the minimum wage. Anything surprising there, Mordecai?
Rob, I think one problem is that we've all become sort of political pundits in the sense of we always want to talk about the politics of something. And it's almost gotten to the point where we don't actually hear what politicians say. In this case, because it was an official visit, maybe we're sort of more open to hearing what he was saying. And I think what Obama has tried to do in his second term is to learn the lessons of the first term. You know, during the first term, he was a sort of idealistic guy who believed that good deeds would in and of themselves pay off. He was very bad at selling his accomplishments, and he was terrible at defending the health care legislation. So I think what he's trying to do is exactly what you just said, Rob, is he's trying to get the word out of what he's been successful at, and the economy is better. Now it's up to the voters to decide, is it better and therefore Democrats deserve credit, or could it be even better if Republicans were in charge? And that, at the very least, is based on substance. We're judging the president not based on the politics of something, but based on his record.
And then looking forward, minimum wage, he called for an increase. That doesn't seem likely to happen at the federal level anyway, given the makeup of Congress now. Is that an issue you think that Democrats are going to try to push partly as an election issue, but as a policy issue beyond that?
Well, there's no doubt that part of the ideology of the Democratic Party is to increase the minimum wage, just like part of the ideology of the Republican Party is not to do that, to let the market set wages. And I suspect that that's a relatively motivating issue in terms of what Democrats believe in and what voters would like to a Democratic candidate to do in case, for example, if they won the governorship. But given that we're in such an intensely partisan situation, and we're in this very odd situation in Wisconsin where the electorate, there practically aren't any undecideds. You know, the latest polls are 46-46, 47-47. You wonder who those 6 or 8% might be. Where have they been for the last 4 years? But both for Governor Walker and for Mary Burke, the key is to figure out a way to talk to those undecideds, because those 4 or 5 or 6% are going to decide who's the next governor. And I suspect that based on their polling, they're going to find out, both on the Republican side and the Democratic side, if they should talk about the minimum wage, whether it's Democrats who should raise it and say they're for it, or Republicans should raise it and say they're against it. The key is to unlock the undecideds.
You know, it's interesting, whatever you think of the candidates and the president's talking about substantive economic issues. Both campaigns are mostly talking about jobs and the economy, not so much about stylistic stuff or secondary things. Is this a good thing that there's this focus on a really core issue in this race?
Rob, you've really put your finger on it. As you'd expect of a professor, I believe in ideas. I believe in the power of ideas. And I'm just delighted if you've really gotten into something, your insight is right, that people are thinking about substantive issues. Has the president, have the Democratic Party, are they better on economic management, or are the Republicans better on economic management? You know, that's substance. It's not the horse race. It's not styles. It's not who has better advertising, who has more money to spend. So ideally, I think it'd be terrific if the election for governor in November was really a referendum on where is Wisconsin economically. Are we doing well and we want to continue with the incumbent? Or are we not doing as well as we could have been and we want to change governorships?
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Mordecai, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Mordecai Lee. He's professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Democratic candidate Mary Burke is the first woman to win a major party nomination for governor in Wisconsin. She's on a ticket with a female attorney general candidate, Susan Happ. On the other side, Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish is seeking re-election herself. So many women running for higher office in the Badger State has got a lot of people talking about the role of gender in politics. We've got Georgia Durst-Lotti to expand that conversation with us now. She's a professor of political science at Beloit College. Georgia, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you. Nice to be talking to you again.
Well, so we've got some analysts out there saying, hey, this is significant. This means something that we have two women on these two high-profile ballots on the Democratic side. Is this a big year? Does this mean something?
Oh, it absolutely means something. What it means becomes the question, right, Rob? So we really have three questions in why are Democratic women doing so well? Why Democrats, why women, and why Democratic women? So if we just look at Democrats, we can say there's a swing in American politics, and whether you mark it with Nixon or with Reagan, we have been swinging to the conservative side for many decades. Maybe this is the time to swing back, and there may be some evidence about that. Why women? Women have been known as the change agents. They're not like the norm, and so if you want to see change, then women have been, with the exception of Hillary Clinton in the primary in 2008, when an African-American man would have been a bigger change, have been the symbol of change, and voters kind of gravitate to them when they want change. And Democratic women are put in a particular place on the ideological spectrum. And the two or three places on the ideological spectrum. And it may be that given what the Republicans have been putting out in the state of Wisconsin and nationally, they represent something that's really quite different and distinct and a change alternative.
Are they, I mean, when we look at the candidates themselves, do you see that? That they're representing something particularly different, something different than the alternatives?
Well, there's, again, two questions there. Is Mary Burke different than the standard Democratic candidate and maybe even especially Democratic female candidate? Yeah, you know, she comes out of business. She has a very different background than anyone who's ever stepped up to the plate before, whose background has been almost exclusively inside government. And interestingly, Scott Walker has much more of an inside government, his entire career profile, than Mary Burke does. So, you know, just as a strategy, it was good for the Democrats to try to find somebody, and, you know, Mary Burke was this, you know, different candidate. Are they different than other women? We know, for example, that women prosecutors have done very well. They can prove that they're tough, but prove that they're tough on something that really matters to people, tough on crime, locking up dangerous people. Women especially like female prosecutors who lock up dangerous people. And there's a real clear record that comes with that kind of profile. And we can look at Janet Napolitano and Amy Klobuchar as examples of women who have made it into higher-level politics who are prosecutors. So in that sense, Susan Happ follows that track. Mary Burke presents really a more Republican profile than a Democratic profile. And since this race is going to be about the, I don't know, 8% undecideds, maybe that's different and important.
Well, taking a closer look at Mary Burke's campaign and Susan Happ's campaign, are they handling the issue of gender differently compared to one another?
Well, Pat Schneider, when she felt around the presidential campaign, when someone said, "You're running your campaign as a woman," said, "Like I have a choice." You know, I mean, like, seriously. Whether they say they're woman and emphasize women's issues doesn't really matter, because everyone knows they're a woman, sees them as a woman, makes assumptions that are so deeply embedded we don't even know we're making them. So both of them have to have to deal with that. And I think both of them have acknowledged that fact, which is different than some candidates, often moderate Republican women, who just say, oh, it doesn't matter at all that I'm a woman. You know, like to say, I'm a woman. It matters to you out there that I'm a woman. So I think they've both done that. Susan Happ certainly is playing the card of laws matter to women. What I prosecute, what I pursue matters. Things like gay marriage and whether I pursue this or not, because it's largely been so far ruled unconstitutional at the national level. And Van Hollen is pushing this forward. She's playing into much more of it matters that I'm a woman when it comes to choosing how to enforce or pursue laws with vigor or not pursue them with vigor. Mary Burke, and perhaps wisely, is playing into the people who vote their pocketbook. Governor Walker laid out his last campaign, and for that matter, in his reelection, on I'm a job creator. You know, are you a job creator? What are you? Are you a leech off the state because you're a public servant, or are you a job creator? And he set himself up as a job creator and then has fallen quite short. It's true that the economy of Wisconsin is coming back, but it's coming back at a little more than a fourth of the rate of the national economy in the last quarter. So she is wisely, I think, as a strategy, saying, I've actually been in business. I've actually worked with a company that makes jobs. I create jobs. I have created jobs. I've worked in commerce. I've worked in small business administration. I have spent my whole career about making jobs. And because people, more than anything else, vote their pocketbook, that's where she's positioning herself.
I want to back away from Wisconsin for a moment. This discussion happens after some Republican research was revealed on how women view the Republican and Democratic parties. I know you've been following that. What are we seeing from that?
I actually was amazed that Politico got a hold of this. It was the Crossroads GPS internal study that showed that women see Republicans as intolerant, lacking in compassion, and barely receptive to the policies of the Republican Party. Women also see them as stuck in the past, and it's worse in the Northeast and Midwest than other places in the country. So if you go back to why Democratic women, if you couple this finding with Democratic women are seen as a party of change, it makes more sense that somehow they seem to be getting a bump here in, you know, nice Midwest, nice Wisconsin, nice Minnesota, nice, you know, like the nice Midwest orientation towards the world maybe sees, and this has come up in some other places, Republican policies as mean. Now, I know the Republicans don't see it that way. They see it as, in enforcing self-reliance and giving the incentive to pull yourself up. But women are less likely to see it that way. Women are closer to being one paycheck away from disaster. More women benefit from increases in the minimum wage. I mean, there are all sorts of ways in which what the Republican conservative ideology is doing works against the actual economic interests of women. And then when you couple that with lacking in compassion, the Republicans have seen this as an opportunity and, let's see what they can do with that opportunity.
We'll pick up that thought in just a bit. We're talking to political scientist Georgia Durst-Lotti now about how gender is playing into the upcoming elections here in Wisconsin. And we'd like to hear from you on this as well. Does gender play into how you vote? Do you think the gender of a candidate matters at the national level or here in Wisconsin? Why or why not? How do you see gender playing out in the elections for governor of Wisconsin, along with lieutenant governor, and how about that attorney general spot as well? You can join the discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And do you think that female candidates face bigger challenges than their male counterparts? If so, what are those challenges? Again, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post at the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now with political scientist Georgia Durst-Lottie about how gender is playing into upcoming elections here in Wisconsin. You can join in. How do you see gender playing a role in these elections? How does gender affect how you vote? Do you think men and women govern or legislate differently? Call 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll go to Joanne now in Milwaukee. Joanne, hi.
Hi, thanks for having the show. It's great. I am a woman. I'm an educator. And what I have seen is that men really jump in and do things instead of thinking things through. And I'm very, very glad that there's some women out there doing things like Mary Burke. I'm tired of Governor Walker's policies because it's being rammed down our throat. And he's constantly saying the people want this, but there's a great deal of people who don't want this. And I don't think they're acknowledging that.
Joanne, thanks a lot for the call. Georgia, apart from the partisan side of her support of Mary Burke, she seemed to be suggesting, Joanne did, that men and women work differently when they're elected as legislators or in the executive branch. Is there any research on that? Do they really perform differently on the job?
Well, there are thousands of articles about this. And whatever has to be said about this is, on average, right, on average men do this, on average women do that, and the differences on average tend to be relatively small, but that is what everyone focuses on. So what I'm about to say, please put into this, when you know that you know women who are different than other women, you know men who are different than other men. So, especially when you look at something like power, on average, men see power as power over a budget, power over people, power over a policy area, and women, on average, see it as power to get something done, power to make a change that they think is important, power to be effective, and women's definition of power is much more aligned on average with effectiveness, whereas men's is more aligned with status, control, dominance.
And again, that's on average, not on average. Neither gender is lockstep on that.
Absolutely. And generational change is clearly evident.
And we've got a comment from Joe on Facebook who writes, gender bias hurts Burke, but my sense is this bias is more prevalent among conservatives who probably would vote for Walker anyway. And he writes, I have reverse gender bias. I think a woman's greater sensitivity and empathy for others would be valuable in a governor. Well, that takes us to kind of a flip side of the previous question, whether or not men and women hold these political offices differently. Does the public perceive them that much differently?
Well, I think he put his finger right on the crux of the matter for an election, and that is, are the people who have a gender bias towards women and the people who have a gender bias against women, you know, like, how are they going to vote anyway? And so those who are likely to vote for Scott Walker are far less likely to care that she's a woman or to see this kind of change potential, empathy, compassion, etc. Now, what will be really interesting is whether or not some Republican women, maybe North Shore kinds of North Shore Milwaukee Republican women who are moderate, if there were liberal Republicans anymore, they might fall into that camp, whether they see that what Mary Burke is offering is enough to switch over just for that election. just for that particular campaign. So, yeah, you know, the people who care about this are not likely to vote. The conservatives who don't have this gender bias towards women are not likely to vote for her anyway, and the Democrats are likely to vote for her regardless. So it comes down to, as Mordecai Lee was talking about, you know, who are that 8%, and can you, as a campaign, draw a few more leaning Republican, maybe women, into the camp to go out and vote?
Well, apart from the undecided voters, too, and Mordecai touched on this as well, the issue of a turnout. Is it possible that having a Democratic woman on the ticket might help energize turnout in a midterm election?
Well, I believe Scott Walker even pointed to, and this is when I was mentioning the sort of cycles in American politics, Republican voter fatigue. You know, if they're complacent, and Democrats surely had this problem at various points over the last three decades, right? You know, same old, same old. Okay, no big deal. We've got it. I don't have to worry about it. So, you know, the answer is a lot of the polls differ on whether they're looking at likely voters or registered voters. Likely voters are breaking for Mary Burke. Registered voters are breaking for Scott Walker. Both of them are within the margin of error, so I probably shouldn't even be saying that. But, you know, who comes out to vote will be very important. And as you suggested, Rob, I think Democrats have more incentive and more excitement about coming out to vote and to, you know, be able to elect the first Democratic woman governor adds to that excitement.
Go back to our callers now. We've got Brian on the line in Wall River. Brian, hi.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
The financial end of it. Men have better financial support in the political realms than women do. And my case can be proven because the last time back in the 90s, or early turn of the century, when Bob Dole from Kansas was running for his incumbent seat against a woman, and he won his incumbent seat. He came on national television after winning and said the reason she lost is because she didn't have enough money. And I think that's where part of the problem lies, is that the men get more funding than the women do.
Gotcha, Brian. Is that generally true, Georgia?
Generally, it is true, but there are two important caveats. One, more spending does not necessarily equal a win. There is a point of diminishing return, and we probably will see it in the governor's race this time. You know, like, candidates can continue throwing money at a race, and it will not change anybody else, especially when we're looking at 8%. The other thing I can say is Emily's list has been very, very effective in increasing the amount of money focused on a race and the various apparatus of the Democratic and Republican parties do something quite similar. Now, the question will be, can Mary Burke and the Democrats come anywhere close to matching the Republican wealth in something like Crossroads GPS or where the Koch brothers and other super wealthy people donate their money in a very targeted and focused way? Again, there's diminishing returns on that. I see from a press report that Mary Burke has bought 326 press slots, TV slots, and Walker's campaign had 427, if I'm recalling the right number. So, you know, he's bought some more TV time than she has. So we'll wait to see. I think it really comes down to the persuadables, and the persuadables aren't that many.
Take another call now from Randy in Sauk County. Randy, hi.
Hi, yeah. You might be interested. I'm really part of that 8% have leaned towards the governor, but let me tell you what I like about Mary Burke. She when you look at how she's run her company, it's nothing but competent. She has innovative, green, electronic bicycles that are healthful. They're attractive to the youth. And if she does that kind of thing for Wisconsin, where she brings electric motorization to the forefront, things like that are on the forefront. As I look and see what she does, not what she says, what she puts in place, a man would be out there with his chest in the air saying, look what I have done. What she's doing is smart. She's letting the public discover what she's actually done. That is powerful to this 8 percenter, I can tell you.
Randy, thanks for the call. Interesting observation on about how a male from the corporate world against a female from the corporate world would present accomplishments. Do you buy that, Georgia?
Actually, there's been a lot of studies that show that men posture a whole lot more, and women are much more modest. In part, that's because gender roles are expected to be that way. I mean, men are rewarded for posturing and women for being modest. So it's interesting that Randy makes that, I think, very spot-on observation.
You know, it's still a lot more women are running for office, but it's still significant enough that we're talking about it here, for one thing. Is there anything being done to encourage more women to run for office? Maybe we'll get to a point where it's not worth stopping and talking about.
Oh, it would be my dream to have this not be worth stopping and talking about. It also would be part of my desire to have Republican women back in the mix again, able to speak with a much clearer voice than they have been for a while. When I was the head of the National Women's Political Caucus a long time ago, I lamented the fact that Republican women seemed to be pushed out because they were too moderate on average, and that the ones who came in, you know, marched lockstep. But that was part of the Republicans really bringing discipline to their party. It would be wonderful to be to the place that we know that women can be political leaders, that they bring to the table their, as we would say in theory, embodied lived experience. That is, that because they live in a female body, they have experiences that men don't. Because men live in a male body, they have experiences women don't. The problem is not that we have too few women. Rather, it's that it is so imbalanced that when we get to a place where there's a balance again, we will have much better governance, much better policies. We can take advantage of everyone's experience in the world in a much better way when we do that.
We'll leave it there for now. Georgia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure.
That's Georgia Durst-Lotti, professor of political science at Beloit College. For many Wisconsinites, fishing is more than just a pastime. In today's edition of Wisconsin Life, a Shawano angler is making waves in a male-dominated sport.
I've never had that go out, throw the bobber out, drink a beer, and oh, this is, you know, fun and relaxing. If it rains, we're going to go in. I never had that. I've always had the drive. There are those of us that cannot turn this off. My name is Marianne Husky, and I'm a professional walleye angler. Well, we're starting up the four-stroke Strike Master auger. Real easy to use. I grew up in Charlevoix, Michigan. I guess you could say from a child I was always outside. My father didn't have any sons, so I was the one that was helping him in the garage, using a chainsaw to help cut up wood. And then my grandfather and grandmother retired on Lake Michigan. He would take me out on the Great Lakes for salmon. So that's where the fishing obsession began. This is a Plano box full of Berkeley Flicker Shad, number 7. So I probably have about 20 different crankbait boxes, just with the Berkeley Flicker Shads, then the Kin Chow Minnows, then the Reef Runners, etc., etc., etc. when I caught my first walleye, which was through the ice, it absolutely was so exciting. As a matter of fact, I was so excited that I showed everyone, and then I turned around and threw it back down the hole. And then I didn't want to tell anyone that I did that. So it was one of those mistakes that we've all made.
How many lures do you think you have?
Oh, my gosh. Maybe 5,000, 6,000?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to count them. The first professional tournament I fished was in April of 2009. At the time, my husband and I owned a construction company, and I had just shut down a clothing store that I had owned for 5 years. The week after, he fell off the porch, had a head injury, and had a heart attack previous to that. So he was on blood thinners, and his brain hemorrhaged instantly.
At that point, you know,
I was ready to quit. Yeah. Yes. The other professional anglers said you need to keep going. Being on the water, it helped. In 2012, I won the Angler of the Year award. It's very difficult to get. I was the first female to obtain this award. It was probably, for me, the best day ever, just because it was my grandfather's birthday that day. He had passed away the year before. And he was my inspiration, so everything clicked that day. That was by far my best day on the water.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. The series is a collaboration between Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. You can find more info at wisconsinlife.org. Now we're taking a look at an effort to get more women involved in fishing with Barb Carey. She's the president of Wisconsin Women Fish. Barb, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So about how many women are involved in fishing here in the state?
Well, you know, I don't have a statewide number. I couldn't find the state of Wisconsin statistics, but I know nationwide it's, you know, a huge industry, and it's the fastest growing demographic as far as licensed sales go is with women.
And so you see a growing number of women, even without the data, do you get the sense that Wisconsin's following that trend, more women getting out on the water?
Absolutely. I know based on our numbers, when we started out in 2010, we had 44 members, and now in 2014, we have 178 members, and that includes women from five different states, not just Wisconsin.
Why was it important to you to try to encourage more women to fish?
Well, when I was out fishing, I never saw any other women, and I just really enjoyed it so much. I thought, I can't believe there's nobody out here, no other women. They don't really know what they're missing. So that's kind of the reason I started Wisconsin Women Fish, just to kind of create events and invite women and try to get them more interested. And I found that once they had events to go to and some support around fishing, they were all in 100%.
When you talk to women who don't fish, what kind of objections do you hear? What reasons they give for not fishing?
Well, I think the biggest reason is they had never been exposed to it. You know, most people that fish fished as kids, and that's one of the big concerns in the fishing industry is kids nowadays aren't getting that exposure as they did previously. So there's a lot of efforts underway to get more kids involved and get them away from the video games. What I think is if you teach the moms, they'll teach the kids, because it doesn't do any good to stick a fishing pole in a kid's hand if they never go use it. So we're all into getting women and first-time women and even people that just had fished as kids and now are wanting to get back to it.
As you mentioned, a lot of times you'd be out fishing and you'd be the only woman in sight. How do the guys respond? How do the male fishers respond when they see that one of a kind, the woman out fishing?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You get a little bit of everything. In the early days, you know, I found that they were really willing to help and give you information. And, you know, now the bigger boats I drive, you know, they're less likely to give me information when they see me come with my, you know, high-tech boat out there. They're more like turning their nose up a little bit more, not feeling almost like there's some type of competition. And women don't feel that way at all. You know, oftentimes men will keep their fishing information secret. You know, it's something that they don't share. But women, I find, really want to share the information, and they want to share it with their friends, and they want to have it be more of a community thing with their fellow club members or fellow anglers. And there's not that element of keeping things a secret.
What is it that you love about fishing, Barb?
Well, I tell you, you know, I was out on the lake this morning, and there's these pine trees and eagles and beautiful clouds, and I fish everywhere from Lake Superior to rivers to streams, and it just creates adventure in my life. And when you're fishing, as long as you have a line in the water, something exciting can happen at any moment. Mm-hmm. And having that anticipation of something that's what I think anglers are drawn to. It's just a feeling that you get that something big could happen any moment, and a lot of times it does.
Did you start as a kid, or did you come into it later in life?
No, I started when I was a kid. I remember standing on a dock when I was a kid, and we'd catch 100 bluegills in a day just off the dock, you know. And my family didn't really fish. You know, surprisingly, I'm one of the only members in our family that are active in fishing. But I did have some cousins, some young cousins, and so that's kind of how I started.
Do you think people are more prone to take their sons out to fish than their daughters?
Well, not necessarily. You know, I do see a lot, you know, when I look in other boats, I do see a lot of young girls. I think that the anglers that are raising children, I think it's really important to them to pass on that tradition. Kind of the missing link there is that group of people that never got to fish as youth they're the ones that aren't passing it on to their children.
And what are you doing at Wisconsin Women Fish to try to bridge that gap and get people involved?
Well, you know, I find once people find us, oftentimes the women say, oh, I wish I'd have found you years ago, because it is quite a fellowship of people that are drawn together by this common passion. We have women from all over, then they stay connected. Someone just, like one club member was just driving through Minnesota. She lives in Wisconsin, and she just stopped in at one of the other gals' house in Minnesota, and they went fishing for the day. So having a peer group that you can learn from, and your skills can improve, and you can be exposed to new water and do it in the comfort of a group where you know you're going to be safe, you know you're going to be learning, and you're going to be having fun.
Well, just briefly, before I let you go, if there's a woman out there thinking, yeah, sounds good, sign me up, where does she sign up?
Well, we have a website that's www.wiwomenfish.com. And we also have a Facebook page, so we're really active on Facebook. If you just Google Wisconsin Women in Fishing, we come up all over the place. And surprisingly, the demographics of our women are oldest. Our oldest woman is 78 years old.
Never too late to start. Barb, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Barb Carey. She's president of Wisconsin Women Fish.